give our colleagues a minute or two and then get started. Okay, let's get started. Let me just kick this off with some just general comments about the guiding thoughts behind the package that Andrew and his team of analysts are going to run through with us this morning. Thinking back on that context of where we are, thanks to the decisions that the council has made over the last few budget cycles, not just in our regular budget cycle, but also in the last few bumps, we are in a good place. We are low in debt, and we are seeing a little additional revenue. That's a good place for any organization to be, and I think we should all feel good about the guidance that we've collectively given to the city's expenditures over the last couple of years. Secondly, we are, as we heard here from Josh, seeing a really strong economy. We're likely to see continued availability of particularly one-time resources over the next budget or two to be able to keep making smart investments. So the philosophy that I tried to apply to this package as we developed it and listening to each of you in terms of things that you were particularly interested in was really sort of four areas. One, maintaining and investing in critical infrastructure, basic services. When you have one-time revenues, what do you spend it on? Capital assets in part, and in fact, in more than just 25% of this package. Secondly, we should keep making progress in emergency preparedness. The last discussion, I think, really highlighted that. We have a long way to go. Every opportunity we get to make a smart investment in additional emergency preparedness when we have one-time resources, I have an inclination in that direction, and obviously we got some strong proposals from the bureaus for doing that. We need to comply with the Department of Justice's requirements for the Police Bureau and elsewhere in what we do, particularly in the Police Bureau. And so there's some particular expenditures here to continue our compliance with the DOJ settlement. And finally, there are a few opportunities for neighborhood improvements, particularly partnerships projects where we can invest a little. Other people are investing a lot more, and we get a better community as a result. So really, those four touchstones are what I've used to try to guide composing this package. You're going to see some significant investments in deferred maintenance. We have a leaking roof on our 911 center. That's a pretty obvious need for a deferred maintenance expenditure, and we propose to make that here. Although the council is shortly going to be taking up a proposal for additional transportation revenue from both an income tax standpoint for personal payments and a business tax resource for businesses, we know that that's not enough and that we ought to be also committing available one-time general fund revenues to critical transportation infrastructure as well, and there's some of that in this package. The CBO has come up with a particularly good plan, I think, for funding the replacement of all five of our city fueling stations, again, on the emergency preparedness front that Andrew and his team will go over. In terms of new requests beyond that capital set-aside list, I've heard a lot, I think other council members have heard a lot about the need to be doing more in terms of very distressed property enforcement, so there's a small investment in doing more there. Still more to do, but this is, I think, a good next step. And to deal with nuisance abatement in the neighborhoods, even though the housing market's a lot better, we still have some really distressed properties, and they cause a great deal of stress for their neighbors. Some one-time implementation costs for the street fee and tax. Again, we are going to be taking up that question shortly at the council, and the assumption is that the front-end one-time startup costs for that are primarily in the Bureau, in the Revenue Bureau, should not be loaded into the new rate structure, but and should instead be borne by the general fund. We're investing in our ability to collect additional revenue. A number of small items that make a difference, things like the Kenton Firehouse, a problem with our Multnomah Youth Commission that they were depending on some grant revenues that they were surprised to not receive this year. So again, these are one-time revenues. So things like that, improving the Kenton Firehouse or keeping the Multnomah Youth Commission at its current level of effort are the kinds of things we can do with bump revenues. Likewise, in my office, continuing to fund the extraordinary costs of last Thursday, even while continuing to work to transfer that event to community ownership rather than city ownership. A couple of things I'm particularly happy about including here. We're going to hopefully have support from our voters today for investing in the park system that we have. As Commissioner Fish mentioned earlier, what Commissioner Fritz has been doing is focusing new available resources on park investments in East Portland. Well, we've got a bunch of parkland in East Portland that's not been master planned yet, and this package includes funding that master plan work. It's about a $300,000 investment in developing those master plans, again, so that we are ready to invest capital dollars when we have them. I mentioned the DOJ agreement. There are six limited term positions included in this package. Several of them are specifically called for in the DOJ settlement. For example, there's a community engagement and outreach analyst that supports the compliance officer community liaison position and the compliance the COAB, the board, as well. So there are these six positions. We'll talk about those in greater detail, but they are in this package, as are a couple of additional positions, two officers and a sergeant to support our domestic violence effort to particularly be available for processing and acting on restraining orders, something that, again, I think we all support being able to actually perform in that critical area of public safety. A couple of others that I just want to mention. This is one-time revenue. We have an ongoing question about the contract with RAC. This rectifies that for the moment with a one-time expenditure. We still have to get at the longer-term questions there. Commissioner Fish mentioned the Concordia Early Childhood Learning Center earlier. It includes a small appropriation for that, as we also have for Halpern Fountains and Zinger Farms, places where, again, there's a big fundraising effort going on by one of our community partners, whether it's a university and the school district in one case, a nonprofit in another, or a local improvement district in the third. Each of these are places where we can invest a little bit of one-time money and leverage a great deal of investment by others in things that will make those neighborhoods a lot more livable. So that's a quick tour through some of these. Again, I've tried to listen carefully to each of you as my colleagues in terms of things that you thought were critical, and then stick to those principles of investing these resources in critical infrastructure, emergency preparedness, DOJ compliance, and with a little bit of attention to neighborhood improvements as we can get to them after those first three must-do kind of priorities. So that's the philosophy behind the package. Again, Andrew's got a presentation to walk you through it in greater detail and a spreadsheet. So let's take it from there and interrupt with questions whenever you've got one.
Great. Andrew. Thank you, Mayor, for the intro. So you have a few slides, but we're actually not going to put them up because I'm not going to use them very much in terms of your binder. And there's some additional material behind that as well. There's the general fund reconciliation report, which again discusses all the issues going on with the general fund in the bump. There's a position change report, which again notes all the position changes in the bump. And then we've also included infrastructure project summary ranking sheet. This is coming out of the capital projects that work group that Sarah and I will talk about a little bit in terms of the effort that went into that, as well as a one-pager on the city fueling infrastructure. So I'm going to walk through all of those things relatively quickly. Jump in and stop me if you have specific questions as we go through it. Just as a reminder, the fall bump, in terms of an overview, there are a few different things that we do in the fall bump. This is where bureaus can budget additional balance to true up to what actually happened in 13-14. So after we close the books, they have a better sense of their ending balance, and this is true for the general fund as well, which is why we're noting the $10.1 million of excess fund balance in the general fund. And as we do talk to the reporters, although as Commissioner Fish has mentioned, it's not always picked up this way, this is a normal excess ending fund balance. Under financial policy, we are required, and I think appropriately so, to forecast conservatively. We forecast about in the general fund about $500 million of expenditures and about $500 million of revenue, so about $1 billion in total. So this represents a 1% deviation to the positive, which, given that we forecast conservatively, is actually exactly where we expect to be in sort of a normal, growing, stable economy. So again, this $10.1 million, it's not found money. It's not surprise money. It's really what we would expect. And again, last year, the number was a little bit higher. In a recession, we won't see this, but again, in an expansion, we generally will. And I think, again, as part of the fall bump, then council has a conversation about what to do with that, whether to invest in infrastructure, hold for the next budget, et cetera. Also, in terms of the fall bump, there's carryover. Again, bureaus set aside carryover dollars in the spring, and so council approves those coming forward now in the fall. New items, and the mayor's talked about those that are in his proposed bump, but bureaus can make requests for one-time projects and programs. And then finally, any other adjustments that a bureau might make. So with that, I'm actually going to go to the general fund reconciliation report, and I'm going to go through this relatively quickly, but we'll actually pivot off of this to some other things that are in your binder. So this is the orange spreadsheet with the orange banners on there. And it's broken up into the different sections of the things that I was just referring to in terms of the bump. So the very first thing there is the capital set-aside request. And one of the things just to remind council coming out of this last year, in this last budget process, you asked CBO to convene a work group of capital managers from throughout the city to talk about options for bridging the infrastructure maintenance gap. You hear every year from us about how large that gap is and the infrastructure that needs to be taken care of, and you asked for some options in terms of how to bridge that. And so we did convene that work group. We convened asset managers from throughout the city to discuss sort of the options for that, and you did receive that options funding report a couple of weeks ago. And included in your binders, I think it's the very last page, are the report recommendations that came out of that. And I'm just going to briefly go over that. Again, the budget note that you included in the budget asked for this report to come forward as part of the bump, which is why it was included in those materials and included here as well. These are not necessarily things that we're going to take action on right now, but they are things that council should consider taking action on in the near future. So I'll briefly go through the report recommendations. And again, these are recommendations coming from the Citywide Asset Managers Group. In the current year, they suggested and they recommended that council increase the general fund fall bump allocation to major maintenance and replacement projects. Again, the minimum there is 25% by policy, and they recommended the council spend more than 25% if possible, and the mayor's proposed bump does that, again, spending just about $4 million out of the $10.1 million available. And then the committee also, you know, again, recommended that PBOC continue to pursue new revenues. There's a longstanding realization there that the revenue from the gas tax and other sources is not keeping up with PBOC's need in terms of their overall infrastructure. In terms of 15-16, again, the committee recommended that council look at some potential policy revisions in terms of that 25%, and suggested that maybe council want to increase that to 50%. So as that, again, as we identify this excess balance every year, maybe saying that, you know, 50% of that should be allocated to infrastructure. And again, the 25% is a floor, but raising that floor up to 50%. And then also they suggested reestablishing the general fund capital set aside using one-time general fund and PSSRP funding. PSSRP is the Public Safety Systems Revitalization Project. That is the final projects there are winding down, and there is some ongoing money available that if council wanted to, as those projects finish, if council wanted to redirect that ongoing money into a yearly capital set-aside, that's an option. And as you heard from Josh, our one-time forecast for this next year may be in the range of $10 million. And council could take a portion or all of that and, again, redirect that into a capital set-aside. Some members of council were here the last time we had a capital set-aside, I think back in 2008. This is essentially it's a fund that bureaus can apply for every year. in terms of their major capital projects. And again, we had a little bit of that in this fall bump, which I'll talk about. But this would, as part of the budget process, allow bureaus to bring forward capital projects. There's generally a committee that makes recommendations, and then council gets the ultimate say in terms of how to divvy that up. Obviously, the larger that set aside is, the more of those capital projects we can make progress on. Another recommendation coming from this committee was to incremental rate increases for the internal service funds, including facilities and technology. Those funds are not currently collecting the appropriate amount for replacement of some of those assets. And so, again, some incremental rate increases there would allow for those replacement costs. That obviously is borne by the bureaus and would require some sort of an offset or additional funding to make those. But, again, as best practice, it would be good, and this committee believes it would be good to have those replacement costs built in so that it becomes an automatic thing that when the asset reaches its end of life, we have the funds set aside for replacement. Debt financing, the fueling system infrastructure, and I'll talk more in detail about that in just a second. And then also potentially developing ongoing general fund CAL targets. So in addition to this capital set aside, which is one-time dollars, the question for some of these bureaus was how do we increase their major maintenance ongoing funding so that they can be taking care of their own assets on a yearly basis and have the certainty of that funding. And then in 16-17, it was just, again, repeating those in terms of potential incremental rate increases for replacement. Again, considering the ongoing general fund options developed in the prior year, continuing those, and then the capital set-aside allocation with the PSSRP funding. So again, those are included in a much larger report that's been posted on our website and provided to all of council offices. And I'm happy to take any questions on those specific recommendations. But this group of asset managers, I think, is going to continue to meet mm-hmm. periodically. Mm-hmm.
Sarah Lowe, City Budget Office. Yes, we do plan to meet in November to review the ranking criteria that we developed, and then we will meet again through the CAMG and possibly in other meetings to develop these ongoing general fund options. And there's some research that we want to do around that to determine the actual ongoing amounts needed by bureaus. So there will be sort of more to come on this, I think.
And then the second piece of this, in addition to coming up with those longer-term funding options, was to look at allocating out some of the excess balance that we're talking about in the fall bump and developing some criteria and a ranking process to evaluate those projects. What you will see on the first page, and going back to the general fund reconciliation sheet, or Exhibit 4, that top sheet, you can see that Bureau submitted just under $45.3 million of capital projects. These are not... this is not an exhaustive list. The list of infrastructure backlog projects in the city is much larger than this. But we asked bureaus to go ahead and pull out some of their highest priority projects and submit them as part of this ranking process. This same group of asset managers developed criteria that we would evaluate these projects on. And then bureaus were asked to go back and self-rate using those criteria each one of their projects. After doing that self-rating process, self-scoring process, those came forward. There was a validation committee, which included, again, staff from all of the major asset bureaus, and including Water and Sewer, who didn't submit anything, but we tapped into some of their asset management expertise as part of this process, which was very helpful. And a validation committee looked at those to make sure that the scoring criteria had been applied equally had been applied consistently across all the different bureaus. And what came out of that, you'll see a couple more exhibits back, is the infrastructure project summary ranking sheet. So this is a three-page listing of that $45 million of projects and essentially how they scored. And you can see their overall score on the right there from highest to lowest in terms of overall risk. And Sarah, do you just want to talk briefly about the risk and benefit criteria that were used here?
Right. So the work group developed a scoring criteria that evaluated the risks of asset failure and then the benefits of completing the project. So it was actually looking at two different areas. And the consequence of asset failure was actually rated or weighted more heavily than the benefits. I do think that the group wants to continue to review this and refine this to improve it. For future use.
And I don't understand how that translates into the proposed bump, because there's three parks projects that are in the top 10 and then none of them got funded, whereas others parks asks that were not in the top 10 did.
So the goal of this was to say, if we ranked all these projects, how would they rank? then the question becomes, given those rankings, what are the funding decisions? And so you can see in the CBO recommendations that came a couple of weeks ago, and I think in the mayor's funding decisions, there's a point where you look at the top at the risk criteria and then have to sort of figure out what are the dollars available and where should they go. So for instance, the second project on here is a PBOT replacement of a bridge for just under $10 million. Given that there was only $10.1 million in CBO's view, and I'll let the mayor speak for his decisions, but in our view, when we made our recommendations, we thought, okay, it would be better to divide that among some projects that were smaller dollar amount lower on the list, knowing that that's still an urgent project that will need to be dealt with.
Right, and obviously that's a conversation I'm going to need to have with the mayor as to why a $500,000 project that's not in the top 10 got funded and one that is in the top 10 didn't.
Right, and I think the best way to summarize that for the moment is this is not the only funding stream we are managing. We're going to find out tonight if we're managing one more that you've worked really hard to create. We're going to find out in 3 weeks whether or not the city council is going to act on transportation funding in general. So I think we have to make sure we correlate what we're doing now with the strategy for implementing each of those other revenue options.
Well, again, just in case anybody's watching that hasn't yet turned in their ballot, the parks bond, should it pass, is going to provide us with $68 million. We need $360 million over the next 10 years to take care of major maintenance that we know needs to be done.
Right.
So I hope that we can have a conversation when we actually vote on the bump as to which projects are the most urgent.
And so, again, then what you see there, and I think the three that the mayor is funding in terms of the building repairs out at the 911 center, and then the money going to PBOT, the Transportation Bureau for Bridges and Structures and Signals and Streetlights, were in the top five, I believe, in terms of the projects ranked. What we would like to do is to replicate this as we go into next year's budget process. I think the bureaus that went through it felt like it was a pretty good process. And again, we'll continue to revise it. But again, the idea being to bring a little bit of objective criteria as we go through this, because again, we will never have enough resources. I don't want to say never. We are unlikely to have enough resources in the short term to make a huge dent, but we should have some to make some dent. And I think making sure that we're going after those highest risk projects is an important component.
I've heard this explanation before, but I'm dense. Can somebody explain the RAC gap to me?
So moving away from capital.
Before you move away from the capital, I just want to point out to my colleagues on the council on that table for infrastructure projects, the top-ranked parks project is that DDC controls the HVAC management system. It also shows up on the general fund reconciliation first page as titled the Walker Central Energy Control. This provides the climate control for many of our community centers. So we have people working in Mount Tabor who are working in 90-degree heat or shivering cold because the HVAC isn't working. So that's why I consider that, or I agree with the infrastructure committee's ranking. That's our highest. It's wasting money in energy, and it's putting our employees at risk. So I will be asking council to look at that most closely.
And actually, I'm going to, Commissioner Novick and Commissioner Fish was just walking into the room when you asked your question about the RAC gap. I'm going to defer on that for a second while we finish this, and as we get to the new projects, his question was if we could explain sort of the RAC gap, and you or I can take a shot at that in a minute when we get to those new, the RAC gap, yeah. When we get there. Any questions overall on the capital? Again, we'd like to replicate this going forward, and hopefully you found the information useful. I think we certainly did, and I think the bureaus did as well, and they did some own internal process around this. Any questions about the ranking?
Dan, process? You're going to get to this, but the fueling station improvements there are financed elsewhere in the package, even though they show at zero here. That's because we're proposing to pay for them a different way.
Thank you. It's a great segue into that. So you will see that also some of the very high-ranked projects here have to do with the fueling stations. And actually, the number one project had to do with one of the fueling stations, and then the others, there are five existing fueling stations, all of which need to be replaced, one of which is already leaking, that we've already been cited by the DEQ for again, some of that environmental damage. And so one of the things that is also in your binder is a two-pager entitled City Fuel Infrastructure Funding Options. And this is something that we put together at the request of the mayor that sort of looked at some different ways that we might be able to address this fueling station issue. And what CBO recommended and what the mayor believes is the right approach is option number three, which is to debt finance this. So all the fuel stations in terms of replacing those five that we have, as well as adding one on the west side at the Sears Center, as well and one east of 205, there's a total remaining cost there of about $12.6 million. And if we were to debt finance that, you can see the debt schedule there. It'd be about $1.1 million a year over 20 years. And again, divided between some general fund bureaus and non-general fund bureaus. And that division is based on the amount of fuel used. And so the proposal here, and this is not specifically, well, I guess it is a bump proposal. It really is a 15-16 issue. But really, the idea is to, you know, take action in the bump to give us authorization to move forward with this plan and build this into the 15-16 budget. So again, I think for general fund bureaus, we would be making adjustments, CalTarget adjustments to their budgets. For the non-general fund bureaus, they would have to build this into their 15-16 budget, so essentially absorb this additional cost. But this is a way to take care of those fuel stations overall, which again, ranked relatively high on the overall infrastructure project list.
And I just want to say that conceptually, that approach makes sense to me. Speaking as the Transportation Commissioner, I don't know where PBOT is going to find $349,000 a year, but conceptually, it makes sense if the bureaus have the money.
Part of the recommendation is that we add to the Cal for the general fund bureaus so that they are not forcing to take cuts for that, but that we would add some of the ongoing general fund for that. Is that correct?
It would be for general fund bureaus, right? PBOT, BDS, you know, BES, water, et cetera, would need to absorb that. So, okay. The next section on here, I don't think we need to spend any time on. It's encumbrance carryovers. These are contracts that were in place at the end of the year that bureaus are just asking to carry that over.
Actually, I do have a question on the top of page two. The only two of the encumbrance requests that you're not proposing to carry over are two in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Why is that?
And so those are actually revenue carryover requests.
And why are you not proposing?
So the City Council, there's a policy, the financial management policies that were just updated a month or two ago by Council. Bureaus are allowed to carry over excess revenue that they collect in excess of the program costs. To the extent that they collect revenue in a program that also has a general fund subsidy, the assumption is that that revenue first is used for the program and offsets the general fund expenditure. So those two programs, although they did collect excess revenue above what they had budgeted, still receive general fund subsidy for those programs. So the idea here is that their revenue they're collecting first supports the program before the general fund does. The reason for this change was really just it's really to avoid the general fund being the first one that pays for these, and then bureaus that collect excess revenue would be able to carry that over for that program. I'm not sure if I explained that clearly, but
to the extent that these programs have generated some excess revenue, wouldn't it be helpful to the general fund to keep it within those bureaus?
Well, they've collected excess revenue above what they budgeted, but they did not collect excess revenue above the program cost of what it costs to run the program. Yeah, I mean that so the additional $25,000 and $4,000 last year stayed within the bureau, was used, and then the general fund that they needed for those programs was reduced, which means that the overall balance, the $10.1 million, is $29,000 higher than it would have been. And then there's the list of new requests here, and I actually think the mayor has covered in terms of what is in his proposed bump, and so I'm happy to take questions, or I don't know if there are specific questions for him. This may be an opportunity. Again, I know Commissioner Novick had a question about the RAC app. The one I will talk about that he mentioned just about 10 lines or so down the page, the debt retirement internal loan repayment, the $1,186,000. This is to pay off an internal loan that we made, you may recall, to get the McCall's building off of the Water Bureau's books. And we made that internal loan from our, we did, it's an intra-city loan from our internal service funds to the Water Bureau to pay for that. The general fund is paying that back. This would essentially take that off the books using the one-time. It does free up $350,000 of ongoing, so it seemed like a good target for a short-term one-time investment that frees up some ongoing money for future budget decisions. Otherwise, if they're
on this list.
So I have a number of questions. Appreciate the funding for the expanding the extremely distressed properties enforcements and nuisance abatement, as we discussed in the budget last year, that we expected that there might be a shortfall, and indeed there is, and we can't catch up. So that's very helpful in development services. Also appreciate the sick time program being funded rather than being taken out of my office budget. I'm wondering about the not funding the Office of Equity and Human Rights translation and interpretation pool request.
Yeah, we've got $50,000 already allocated to that, right?
Yeah, the Office of Equity was able to identify internally $50,000. We're also working with them. I know the mayor's office working with them as well to see what the total sort of universe of translation services. And this is translation, interpretation, and the community engagement liaisons as well are in that total request. And so I think that continuing to work with Dante and his folks on what that total amount is. The other thing that CBO was concerned about with this was making sure we don't supplant existing Bureau investments in translation and interpretation. Bureaus currently are paying for that. And to the extent we're providing some resources, I think the intent there is to make sure that bureaus aren't not doing translation because of a lack of resources, which I think is a good intent.
I think the intent is to streamline it so that bureaus who don't often do translation services have a one-stop shopping place to go with a place that does.
Right. And I think also figuring out how, you know, to the extent bureaus are already paying for it, how do we create a mechanism that doesn't essentially transfer that over to this general fund pot?
I'd be interested to know how much bureaus are actually paying for translation services, because my impression
is
not much.
That we've asked.
Because it's generally too difficult to get the translation. I mean, for instance, sign language is one of the ones that I'm most familiar with. Bureaus don't know that they need to engage a certain number of translators. They don't know that they need to get them reserved several weeks ahead of time, and mm-hmm. so it just doesn't happen. So that's,
And Commissioner, real quick on the BDS, I do just want to point out, because I know BDS requested that as ongoing funding. And again, in the bump, we can only allocate one-time funding.
Right, and we'll be coming back in the next budget. So, and I think it is appropriate to apportion one-time funding and then have the bigger discussion. And in fact, for many of the items on this budget, including some that are proposed to be one-time funded, I do think that some of them deserve to be more in the context of the overall budget rather than a one-time, which may become a shadow budget or a serial one-time.
I'm not interested in going down that road again. So.
Really? I mean, we had the discussion in the last budget about BDS being willing to or able to use reserves to fund these programs one time, with the expectation that they come back into the ongoing budget in the next one. So I felt that this request was honoring that. But yes, I thank you for making that point. So I'd like to have some more discussion about translation services, because I think that there is a way to make that easier for bureaus to do.
Yeah, my impression is, and Dante can correct me if I'm wrong, that the $50,000 that the bureaus identified is enough to maintain the service for now. We'll need better numbers about what's needed ongoing in the next general fund budget, and maybe even the spring bump. But it's we have funds assigned to provide the service. It's on an incremental basis as requested. And yeah, I don't know if Dante, if you want to come talk about that for a moment now. But that's my sense of where we're now positioned. Doesn't mean that we won't need more later.
Thank you, Mayor. We do have the numbers. We received the numbers out of SAP for the last fiscal year. The total amount of money spent purely on translation, just document translation, not ASL or any outreach, was a total of $89,000 for all the bureaus. And so, as I said, that only includes just purely document translation. So, honestly, I don't think that is enough, right. And I think that there is an underutilization by the bureaus because it costs money. And I think that that's probably one of the first things that gets set aside when we're talking about what resources can or are used. And so I think there is a need for additional.
Yeah, there'll be more. We just don't know exactly how much. Right.
I have the numbers broken down by bureau from the last fiscal year to total $89,000.
Okay, good, good. Thank you.
Thank you. So in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, In the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, I appreciate the funding for the State Farm Youth Advisory Board. My understanding is that this is less than the total grant for State Farm that State Farm had been given for the Multnomah Youth Commission, which was $100,000, but that Multnomah County is paying, they've set the number, I think, at $56,000 as the actual absolute minimum that the Multnomah Youth Commission needs, and I appreciate Multnomah County funding half of that.
The request has been made. I don't know if the county's yet agreed to do so.
Traditionally, the county has been more generous than we have with the Multnomah Youth Commission. I'm concerned about not having the funding for the external materials and services for the Youth Commission at $9,000. One of the requirements that the Department of Justice lawyers talked to us about in our discussions of how to seat the Community Oversight Advisory Board was their insistence that youth have to be involved at every step of the way. And so we were hoping to go to the Youth Commission to facilitate that. They need some funding to be able to get the message out to the various schools and other and universities and such. So again, I'd like to discuss that one with you, Mayor. I do have a concern about the Office of Neighborhood Involvement Kenton Firehouse. This is one that's particularly dear to my heart because the initial funding for fixing the Kenton Firehouse was from savings from the salary of Afifa Amashave, who died last year. So my understanding is that this money, at request at $20,000, was for a PBOT requirement to do something different with the curb cut because it used to be a firehouse and it's now not a firehouse, so PBOT wants us to not have such a wide curb cut. The funding estimate that the city got was $20,000, and so I'm very concerned that the proposed funding is at $5,000 because that just doesn't seem like enough to do a city-funded project.
I believe it was renegotiated between the bureaus, right? That's why the numbers less.
Do we have anybody from ONI here?
Yeah. Of a hard bargain with PBOT, we think. Is that right?
Yeah, there were discussions between Commissioner Novick, PBOT, ONI, and the mayor's office to determine what parameters were required and what might be waived. And then we also got additional quotes from different contractors, and we were able to get the amount down from the $20,000. So we feel like we could definitely cover it. Yes, thank you.
I assume you'll go down your list too. At the bottom of the page, there's the security infrastructure investment from parks. My understanding that was partly it's going to be required due to our compliance with credit card reporting that we're supposed to have cameras when we're using credit cards, which of course many of our community centers do. So I'm worried about not funding that request.
Claudio Camposano with the City Budget Office. Right now, based on recent discussions with the audit team, we believe that the pin pads, the new pin pads that have been installed at those locations, will likely alleviate any concerns about PCI compliance. So that doesn't undercut the issue of security at the centers. But as far as the urgent requirement for PCI compliance. They believe that it will those new pin pads will likely deal with that concern.
Okay. And then, Claudia, since you're here, the next one at the top of the next page about no funding for the Americans with Disability Act transition plan. Parks has got 70% of the ADA non-compliant, and the bond will, if it passes, fund some of those, but it won't fund a staff position. So why are we not starting to address those challenges 20-some years after the ADA has passed?
This was part of the request during the 14-15 budget as well. And I think that that right now we're, as we recommended during the budget process, we finish the, you know, get to the transition plan and sort of assess exactly what, you know, what the priorities are citywide prior to making any large investments in individual bureaus, so that we can identify what the highest priorities are citywide.
Just putting it out there, colleagues, it's going to need to get done at some point. I'm nearly done. The six positions within the police bureau for the DOJ agreement does not include a mental health specialist. Is that correct, Mayor?
That's right.
That's really a problem, that we desperately need somebody to help both the city attorney's office and my office and the council offices in implementation of the settlement. And so that's, again, something that you and I can talk about.
Yeah, these are the positions in the bureau that are called out for in the DOJ settlement.
Right.
Andrew, net of this recommendation the mayor has put in, what will be the amount left in contingency?
So assuming the changes here, the amount left in contingency would be $1.6 million.
Halfway through the year, we're at roughly half of the contingency fund that we started out with.
Yeah. So we're not saving any of this money for adding to the contingency?
No. Currently, no. Contingency right now is about $2.3 million.
Yeah, it's 2.3 and really 2.1 after some pre-allocations that that we had earlier in the fiscal year for the new city initiative. A small parks item, and I'm forgetting the last one, but it's in the
summer lunch.
Yeah, and the summer lunches was the small one, and
PBA.
Downtown marketing initiative. So those had already drawn on contingency from the 2.3 down to 2.1, and the net changes here would after the 10.1 million of additional balance would be an additional draw of about $500,000.
Oh, yeah. So you want to walk some combination of you, Commissioner Fish, want to walk through the what is the RAC gap and how are we addressing it?
Yeah. So it's not my language, RAC gap. And I fully support the mayor's proposal here. So I will give you my best understanding of this. For this calendar year, RAC expected to receive an additional at least $1.2 million to support in operating dollars to support organizations. And part of it was to meet the aspirational goal of providing a 5% floor for certain organizations, which was embedded in the arts tax. What this would effectively do is cover half that gap that they project based on what they hope to get from the city and the arts tax to fund arts organizations with operating dollars, and it would get certain organizations closer to the goal that was established of a 5% floor in operating support from RAC. And it is it's a one-time request, so it is not an ongoing commitment. And it is because RAC's dispersal, because this is operates on a calendar, not a fiscal year, this particular piece, this would allow them to get closer to the goal they had established for operating support, but still falls about $600,000 short for this year. And it is partly structural because of the new sort of normal of what's expected under the arts tax. But it is, in effect, one-time money. The short answer is it's one-time money that boosts operating support from RAC for organizations they support.
But isn't, as you said, isn't the gap between what was expected and what's coming in structural, so why wouldn't this become an ongoing commitment?
It may end up being structural. That's what we're learning, that in fact the expectations on the arts tax might have been overly rosy. And this does not become ongoing if the council simply declares we're going to make a one-time payment and there's no expectation this is going to be a serial one-time.
You know, arts tax revenues are continuing to grow, but they're not where they were originally projected to be.
Let me just say, Commissioner Novick, directly to your point, I'm not aware, and I don't think the mayor has been approached to make this an ongoing requirement of our budget. This is a one-time ask.
Yeah.
But why is it necessary to do it now in comparison with some of our urgent maintenance needs, for example?
Well, that's ultimately a council decision, comparing and contrasting other priorities. If it's in the fall bump, then they make their distributions in, I think, February for operating support. So by doing it now, we close this delta and we give them the additional resources to make those. The council is going to weigh that against any other request in the fall bump.
But isn't it true that RAC already gets over $3 million in ongoing money from the city? Do you remember how much the $4 million, whereas Parks Maintenance gets 1.5?
As the Arts Commissioner, if you want me to make a defense for investments in the arts, I would say that we underfund the arts in part compared to peer cities. I also my own personal view is since the creative economy is one of the most important drivers of our local economy, investing in the arts to me is a long-term play that allows us to move closer to our aspirational goal of being best in class. And the money goes to worthy organizations. The council as a whole has to decide the competing priorities. I support this because I think the net result is positive. I respect greatly your desire to increase funding for parks maintenance. I think ultimately that's a council decision.
I'm sympathetic to the arts organizations because they expected something that they're not getting, and I understand that they're frustrated that the city, Mayor Adams, didn't anticipate the impact of the retirement income exemption, or didn't even anticipate the fact of the retirement income exemption, et cetera. But there's lots of services and groups that don't get what they expected. I mean, the transportation advocates expected that based on a 1987 resolution, we would get 32% of utility license fee monies forever, and it hasn't been that for a long time. I had a conversation about this with Chris Coleman from Portland Center Stage yesterday, and I apologize for sharing this with all of you for the first time. It just occurred to me yesterday. One thing about the arts tax that I had not focused on until recently is that Thomas Lanham pointed out that as an income tax, it's deductible, which means that, in effect, the richest people in Portland are out of pocket less for paying their arts tax than people who are just above poverty. Because if you're just above poverty, you probably don't itemize, and you're paying $35 a year. Whereas if you make $500,000 a year and your money doesn't all come from capital gains, then you are paying the 35% rate on some of your income. So actually, instead of paying $35 a year on the arts tax, you're paying $23 a year. And I know that we had a discussion last year about whether to change how the arts tax works, and there wasn't much enthusiasm for it. But I'm curious if we simply created some additional brackets above $35 for people with higher incomes to offset the impact of deductibility, how much money would that raise? And that would be a minor tweak that we could send to the voters if the arts community were prepared to make that argument.
I met you, Steve. Earlier, Commissioner Fritz, on the verge of triumph on the parks bond measure, put a marker down for renewal of the parks levy or backfilling of the parks levy. You have just given us a preview of your closing argument on the street fee cap. I appreciate that as well. I think the question you raise is a good one. It's outside my pay grade to address it. I think we should put that in the hopper. And on the ultimate issue of weighing this particular ask against others, I think that's a council decision. And I think your points are valid. If I had general fund bureaus, I'd be asking for 100% of what wasn't tied down. So that's the give and take. I think this has merit independently, and I think the dollars serve important purposes and meet long-term goals of the city. Ultimately, the council decides that question. This is not for me to decide.
And to be clear, I didn't say that we were going to do the levy. We won't do a levy because levies don't just slice the pie differently. It does give me pause to go for a parks district if we're not going to prioritize our own infrastructure needs.
I have a question. How do things end up on the special appropriations list? Where do they come from? I mean, it's just only, what, six, seven items? How did they end up on there?
So special appropriations are city dollars that are appropriated by council that don't have a bureau home. So these are things that just they don't if anything that meshes with an existing bureau, you know, mission or you know, strategic goals would be put with that bureau. And actually, in the last couple of budgets, we've moved a number of special appropriations out of special appropriations into the bureau. But things that don't sort of have a home end up there. The other thing is sometimes in the interim, a commissioner will make a request that comes in as a special appropriations request, particularly if it's a request for a service in a bureau that they don't have in their portfolio. So, for instance, you know, the trail near Robert Gray, I think that money's probably going to be spent by PBOT. But again, it came forward as sort of just a $10,000 request that gets placed here because it didn't come from the bureau itself. So
they come from
council offices.
Okay.
From community groups that communicate with council offices.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So or partners like school districts that have come to us with projects like the Concordia one or the Earl Boyles Early Learning Center. Mm-hmm. Similar situation where we were approached by a school district and asked to partner on a project that they were primarily funding. So similar situations.
But I think you're also picking up on something that's different this year, because I think in past years we've done a bump where we've gone through all of them. And this one, I think, is a little different in that you're presenting it to us with the mayor's proposed. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think we've accelerated that process by having us focus on the mayor's proposed.
It's depended a little bit on when the work session has fallen. In this particular case, the bump's going to be heard next week. You know, we originally had the work session scheduled last week, and so the bump will need to be filed tomorrow. So it seemed most prudent to talk about the mayor's proposed bump since he needs to finalize his decisions and get that in. Our recommendations from CBO come to you through our reviews, which I think were distributed a couple of weeks ago.
Katie, I mean, the shorthand answer to your question is actually literally people come to us sometimes individually, sometimes to several of us, and ask us for stuff. And mm-hmm. sometimes one or more of us then decides, okay, I'm going to ask my colleagues to help provide that stuff. It's really that simple. So it's actually something that probably not as many organizations are aware of or take advantage of as logically should.
No,
except that we're not supposed
right
to
be
diving into the bump to do that. So specifically, Katie, I believe the first three special appropriations were from Commissioner Fish. So you proposed the trail funding?
Actually, I believe Commissioner Fish did.
Commissioner Fish did. And the RAC gap, I don't know where that came from. And then Halper and I did not propose that. And the Portland Public Schools Concordia, where did that one come from?
It came as a request from the school district.
So finishing out this general fund reconciliation, there's program carryover. These are unspent dollars that fell to balance, but again, were originally appropriated for those programs. And so again, they're being recommended here. And then the technical adjustment section, just to hit these balance out to zero, but just to hit, because there are a couple substantive things here. The first one, three lines down, $125,000. This is money being transferred from the Innovation Fund to OMF to hire an Innovation Fund coordinator. So again, it's a position that would be funded with Innovation Fund dollars. The others that are there, and the Portland Police Bureau, the $834,000. This is money again that was set aside in the spring month for these on-body cameras in contingency, and is now being appropriated out to the bureau. And then three things on that list: the $8,600 for summer lunch, the new city initiative, and the PBA Downtown Market Initiative. Council had previously approved these actions in ordinances or resolutions, and we're catching up now in the bump to actually make the budget changes. The last two quick things I will draw your attention to. Behind this is position changes. This is just a list, again, of the position changes in the bump by bureau, just for your information. And then the very final thing that will be in this bump ordinance is a CalTarget adjustments, and this is a little bit of a technical issue, and I think your execs were briefed some time ago about this, but just so you know, it's the Office of Management and Finance is making adjustments to how they allocate out the enterprise business system. This is the EBS division's rates, and the metrics that have been in use were somewhat outdated, so they're updating those metrics and actually changing the way that they allocate those metrics out. We've worked with them over the last few weeks and months on that. They've talked to bureaus citywide about it, and I think we're in agreement that the metrics need to be updated. They're moving to an overhead-like style allocation. It will have a general fund impact of about $1 million. And so, again, this bump will make those general fund allocation changes to current appropriation levels so that the general fund bureaus that are being impacted won't have to do service cuts. But that is $1 million that essentially is being allocated out through CalTarget adjustments now to offset that change. I'm happy to answer any questions. The bump overall, did we cover
other questions, the issues, requests?
I just have, Katie.
What? Oh, no, I just left.
Just one comment I had is that of my bureau requests that are unfunded, the one that I would most like to get back is PBM's request for actually a BDS position for an engineer to do an update of our unreinforced masonry building database. Our database is 20 years old. And both PBM and BDS are currently engaged in trying to figure out what sort of regulatory structure we need to put in place in order to eliminate or at least ameliorate what's one of the biggest public safety threats from potential earthquake, and having that position, which is a short-term thing, in order to update the database would be very useful.
So I guess my counsel to us as a council about this package is one, let's hear from each of you about concerns that you have with where we are at the moment. We'll take this up and address both amendments and adoption next week. Is that right? Next week. And then
next week.
Is that right?
The 12th.
Yeah, it's scheduled to come on the 12th.
Next
the
week. Is that reasonable?
It was originally going to be this week, but it was moved out because of some conflicts regarding the work session. So we're not on a time certain right now, but we were planning on filing for next week.
Andrew, when the mayor puts forth his proposed budget during the normal budget season, there's a dynamic where, after consultation with his colleagues, he will then put his final proposed, which may incorporate some changes. And then when it comes to council, it's open for amendment if there are still things to be resolved. So here we have the mayor's proposed. Next week would be the adoption or just the first reading and open to amendment?
It would be the adoption. So it is the same process. So again, I think is what I heard the mayor say is any issues or concerns, with his office, he will be finalizing his bump decisions tomorrow as we sort of wrap up and we have to notice it in the DJC. And then next week is essentially council's opportunity if there are any additional amendments or changes on the floor. On the day of the adoption, yeah.
So I was actually scheduled to be absent next week. No. Any possibility could we put over to the 19th?
There are no concerns from our perspective. I think that the process is a long one from a bureau perspective, and there might be appropriation issues that folks are sort of waiting up for. But my guess is we're really at council discretion. So yeah.
I don't think that's a problem. Again, to wait for final adoption to the 19th, right? Go ahead and have the hearing next week.
Yeah, we generally on budget items, they don't require a first and second reading.
But we can continue.
Although I guess we could.
It may be a problem for BDS in terms of getting positions authorized.
Yeah.
One way of anticipating whether this presents a challenge for the council will be the next 24 hours in your colleagues presenting you with any proposed changes, whatever adjustments you want to make, and a chance for the council to say whether that's a consensus document or whether there'll likely be amendments. And I would actually welcome this year a chance to have colleagues foreshadow amendments before the actual council day, just so we all are aware of what's coming and can develop our positions and think about alternatives.
Right, I agree. So can we make that work?
Yeah, and I guess just, do you want to just hold off until the 19th to hear it, or did you want to hear it and talk about it and then set it over for a week?
What did you say next? I'm sorry. Yeah, hold the date, but then be prepared to continue it. Right.
So we do have the multifamily short-term rentals coming on the 19th, so right. That will be a long day already.
Could be a long day. We're going to have a number of those here in the next few weeks. Then the second guidance I would give us is let's remember the earlier presentation, and that is this is one bump. We're going to allocate some of these monies according to the council's direction, but we also have some big moving parts here, one of which is the proposed transportation revenue that we're going to take up, the other which is the parks bond measure that we're going to hear about in less than 8 hours. And then the third is, remember, we're going to have a significant, or we are forecasted to likely have a significant amount of one-time revenue in the next couple of general fund budgets. I'm trying to keep all that in mind